Over the past year, the United States has been reaching out and listening. We've joined interfaith dialogues and held town halls, roundtables, and listening sessions with thousands of people around the world, including many of you. And like so many people, you've extended your hand in return, each in your own way, as entrepreneurs and educators, as leaders of faith and of science. I have to say, perhaps the most innovative response was from Dr. Naif Al-Mutawa of Kuwait, who joins us here tonight. Where is Dr. Mutawa? Right here. His comic books have captured the imagination of so many young people with superheroes who embody the teachings and tolerance of Islam. After my speech in Cairo, he had a similar idea. So in his comic book, Superman and Batman reached out to their Muslim counterparts. And I hear they're making progress, too. Absolutely.
That's President Barack Obama speaking about The 99. The 99 is a comic book series based on Islamic culture and religion, where the 99 superheroes each derive a superpower from the 99 attributes of Allah. Created by Naif Al-Mutawa, the comic book is sweeping the Arab world. Steve Paulson asked Naif Al-Mutawa to explain the backstory of the 99.
The backstory of the 99 takes place during the fall of Baghdad in 1258. And the reason for that, I think, I mean, I'm just psychoanalyzing myself, is because when I came up with the concept, Baghdad had just fallen in 2003. And it just linked back in my mind to a story that we had heard generation after generation in my part of the world. It's about the sacking of Baghdad in 1258. And there's a famous library back then called Dar al-Hikmah. And all the books in that library were dumped in the Tigris River. And the Tigris changes color with ink because there are so many books in there. It's a story that every kid in my region knows. And what I did is I rewrote that story with an alternate reality, which is basically that the Mongols came in to destroy the library. That was what they were coming for. But the librarians found out this was going to happen, and they hatched a plan to save that information onto 99 stones.
Now, is there particular symbolism within Muslim tradition about these sacred stones that you have created as sort of the cornerstone of your comic book series?
Well, I made up that story and the stones there, but there's a story, for example, from the Quran. During the year of the elephant, as it's known, which is the year the Prophet, peace be upon him, was born, Abraha, the king of Ethiopia, marched on Mecca, on the Kaaba, to destroy it. And according to the Quran, God stopped him in his tracks by sending birds, and those birds had stones, and they'd kind of, you know, chucked the stones at the elephants. The elephants were, you know, were killed in their tracks, and that's how the Kaaba was saved. So if you think about the storylines of the 99, the main bad guy, his name is Rugal. And in fact, the guy that gave directions to Abraha's army back in the year of the elephant, his name was Abu Rugal, father of Rugal. And so here's Rugal trying to destroy how I see kind of the future of, you know, Islam in terms of being tolerant and peaceful, etc. Even though the religion is not in the storylines, but that's kind of what he represents. And the 99, you know, are superheroes, and superheroes, you know, typically fly. Not all of mine do, but, you know, so they're kind of like birds, right? And they stop him using their stones. They don't pelt him with the stones, but that's kind of the archetype that I lifted from the Quran.
So each of these stones has a particular attribute, or in superpower language, a particular power.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell me about some of these.
Sure. They're based on the 99 attributes of Allah in the Quran, so things like generosity and wisdom and foresight. But there's also things like, you know, destruction and power. And, you know, there's a yin and a yang in the attributes of Allah. And actually, one of the things I was dealing with when I was first creating the characters was, you know, am I going to have all the boys being hegemonous, strong, the destroyer, and the girls being kind and merciful? And I was like, you know what? I want something in here for everyone. And so Mumita, our destroyer kind of martial artist character, is a girl. And Jabbar, one of the muscles, is a boy. And so it kind of evened out the teams. And there's, you know, there would be exactly half boys, half girls. But the thing is, 99 is an odd number, so it's tough to do that.
Hmm. Now, do your superheroes differ from the kind of superheroes that many of us would know from Western traditions, like Superman and Batman?
Yes and no. The Western tradition superheroes are based on Judeo-Christian archetypes. So, for example, like the prophets, all the superheroes are orphaned or missing parents. Superman's parents die in Krypton. Batman's parents die when he's sick. Spider-Man's, we don't even know. He's raised by his aunt and uncle. And all of them get their message from above through a messenger. The prophets get it from God through Gabriel, but Peter Parker's taking a photograph in Manhattan when the spider descends from above and gives him his message through a bite, right? Superman is not only sent from the heavens or from Krypton, but he's sent in a pod, very much like Moses was on the Nile. And then you hear the voice of his father, Jor-El, saying to earth, I have sent to you my only son. Right? I mean, that's kind of God in the Bible. And those, in a very kind of Judeo-Christian Greek tradition, those heroes all have an Achilles heel. Right? So you have Superman can do like everything, but kryptonite gets him. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, yes, they do differ. My characters are based on teamwork and they're diverse. And, you know, it's not the red, white, and blue of Superman and Spider-Man, et cetera. At the same time, my characters do include superheroes from North America and South America and the Middle East and Europe. And it kind of democratizes the superhero concept because it's not who you are or where you're from or what your power is that makes you the hero. It's more the context of the situation because in a lot of situations, our big guy, Jabbar, the guy with the muscles, gets pushed aside because love or mercy can solve that same situation.
And what's striking about your series is your heroes are most powerful when they work together.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is, I suppose, not always the case with Superman. He's a guy who can do it alone.
He can, but he's going to need the 99 in the upcoming crossover.
Oh, you have to talk about that. Pretty exciting. Your 99 superheroes are going to team up with Superman and Batman and other characters from the Justice League, right?
Yeah, very exciting. Very, very excited. The first book comes out in October 2010, and it's President Obama called it the most innovative response to his Cairo speech because what I did, you know, he reached out to the Muslim world, and in response, my characters reached right back out to their American counterparts. And basically, you know, it's a storyline that starts off with distrust because the bad guys cause the distrust, and then it moves over to trust. And, you know, the characters will be standing cape to shoulder and facing things that challenge all humanity.
So was this comic book series your response to what happened on 9/11 or to the war in Iraq?
It was more a response to 9/11 than the war in Iraq. When 9/11 happened, I was a practicing psychologist. I, you know, was training at Bellevue in the Survivors of Political Torture program. I had just left a couple months before then. And, you know, in the therapy sessions, one of the things that struck me is that, again and again, the story of a young man who grew up idolizing their leadership only to end up being tortured by them. And torture is a terrible enough thing as it is, but when your hero's torturing you, what's that? I mean, it just destroys you on many, many levels. And, you know, I quit doing that, went to business school at Columbia University, right, you know, got accepted right before 9/11 and started around then. And during that time, I was thinking, what am I going to do with my life now? I have a doctorate in psychology and I have now an MBA from Columbia. And I couldn't see myself going to business for business's sake. And one of the things that really troubled me as a psychologist, you know, when somebody comes to see you as a patient or a client, how do you work? It's mostly to do with perception. How does a person see themselves? How do they think others see them? And somewhere in the middle there, you do your work. Well, I wasn't happy with how Islam was being seen in the West, but I was more unhappy with how Islam was seeing itself. That, for me, was the more important thing. Because if you fix yourself, then you can kind of fix the other stuff. And for me, I felt 9/11, Islam became the average of 9/11 and what it was before 9/11, which basically it's a regression to a mean. And that mean is very mean because it moves more towards 9/11. That's what benefits, right? And so the thinking was, you know, in the West, when things go that nuts, you know, what do you guys say? You say, sounds like a job for Superman. But there was no Superman. And so I felt that by creating something that could kind of fly in the face of what happened in 9/11 and kind of go in the other direction, where I can go back to the same place that these guys pulled out their hateful messages and pull out peaceful, loving messages, then they just become bad guys with bad messages. Because if the same source can be linked to good and bad, then it's not the source, it's the interpreter of the source. And that's how I chose to kind of go after it. So that's how it was more of a reaction to kind of the bad things happening in the name of my religion.
Now, you've said that you are, to some degree, drawing on Muslim tradition in creating this. I mean, for instance, the 99 attributes of
sure.
Allah. Do you have to be theologically careful about how you construct your storyline?
You know, when I first started, I kept being asked, did you talk to any scholars or any theologians? And I'd always avoid that question like the plague. And the reason I'd avoid it is I didn't want to ask this guy and have him, you know, kind of endorse what I'm doing. And then that guy who he had a fight with 30 years ago on a playground kind of unendorsed me because they still don't talk to each other. And so I'd avoid that. And then if I get pushed, I say, well, you know, I spoke to Emo Phillips. They'd say, Sheikh Phillips, we haven't heard of him. I said, that's a good thing because he's a comedian. Like, well, what do you mean? I said, well, Emo Phillips used to say that every day to the age of 10, he used to pray to God for a bicycle. And then by 10, he realized that God didn't work that way. So he stole the bicycle and started praying for forgiveness. You know, I have 99 working in teams of three. Why three? Because within Islam, you have this idea that you don't leave boys and girls alone together. Now, I'm not proselytizing. There's no religious messages in the storylines. But, you know, to get them into these storylines, into the crevices where it's needed, you got to kind of understand the rules and play by them, but make it in a way that's mature and kind of can work for all audiences. So I have teams of three, two boys and a girl, two girls and a boy, two, three boys, three girls, no problem. Well, and also Carl Jung also spoke about the importance of the number three in all cultures through his work on archetypes. And so I figured, you know, between Carl Jung and between this, this is the right formula. I got accused by somebody who's more hardline Islamic thinker that the Pope sent me to the Middle East to preach the Trinity through the use of the number three and the nine. So, you know, you believe who you want. I give you my version of the story, you know. But see, these things are like, you run in circles with these things. One of the examples that I love, it happened actually here in the U.S. back when evolution was no longer it was a when, and the top universities all accepted it. Some group in the Bible Belt said, you know, pretty much that's right. Those fossils are real. They prove evolution, but the devil put them there. So I mean, you get into these kind of circular logics. You know, things go around in circles. That it's for me, I felt, you know what? I'm not happy on that treadmill anymore. I'm not happy like that hamster. I need to kind of move the conversation forward and not be involved in these debates and get dragged down by somebody who has a little bit of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to your series, The 99, your chief villain is this guy, Rugal.
Yeah.
What would you say is his... What makes him a villain?
Rugal basically is a fascist. Rugal was around in 1492 when basically, you know, Grenada fell, and that's where the 99 stones were headquartered. And he wanted to use those stones to fight off Isabel and Ferdinand's army that were coming to take Grenada. And so the metaphor there is he wanted to use religion for war, basically. But the people who were keeping their eye on the stones to make sure they were safe didn't agree with that these stones were not meant for war. And he went and tried to take all the powers of all the stones into himself and basically tried to become a god. And he couldn't. He disintegrated and reintegrated back, you know, 500 years later. But this idea that, you know, one of the irony is that the biggest sin you can commit as a Muslim is something called shirk, which comes from the word sharik, which means partner. So if you claim that you're God's partner, then that's the biggest sin. And the irony is that these guys out there is, you know, calling, saying this is against Islam, that's against Islam. That's what they're doing. You know, they're making themselves God's partner and doing it in the name of God, which is just, you know, if they didn't do so much evil, you know, it'd be funny. But, and the other thing, Rugal is very paranoid because the stones have a mechanism to self-update. He wants to stop that. Because if he can limit the knowledge in the stones, then he can control the stones and their bearers. But Ramsay doesn't have that anxiety. So the stones are able to self-update and kind of, you know, modernize themselves to the 21st century, whereas Rugal wants them stuck in the 15th century because it's what he understands.
You know, I could imagine that this message wouldn't go over very well in certain countries that have that,
huh?
That tradition.
What message?
Of tyranny.
Huh? What are you talking about? You trying to get me in trouble? See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, no.
Naif al-Mutawa is the creator of the 99. Steve Paulson spoke with him. Naif al-Mutawa lives in his native Kuwait with his wife and five sons.